Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
I looked up and there was a cluster of sparkling lights in front of me. It wasn't more than an arm's length away. And all these different colors, kind of like a sparkler, if anyone's aware of a sparkler, 4th of July, that's what they look like, but with colors. And they showed up and they were there, I don't know, 2-3 seconds, and they disappeared.
Diane Calderon, certified medium, Reiki master, spiritual teacher, author, Living and Loving Life All Day, Every Day, A Mother's Story of Loss, Love, and Connecting with the Afterlife. This is an amazing story because it's one of those things where life takes you in the directions you least expect and maybe a better direction than what you had planned. Go ahead and give us a backstory on this. You know it better than I do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Wendy, for inviting me to be a guest on your beautiful little show, Coffee House. I am sorry. I finished my coffee already. I'm just drinking water now. But I'll tell you, you know, my life up to the point where I start in this book, I was just a regular person growing up, first in the Midwest, then my family moved to Arizona, and I attended school here, graduated from Arizona State University, worked many years in a career in government at various levels. A lot of it was doing research and statistical analysis. So, you know, very, you know, logic-minded. I wrote reports, things like that. My husband was older than me. He retired. We moved up to rural Arizona in the northern part of the state to just live a nice lifestyle as he was retired. After a couple of years, I got bored and went back to work and got on at the Postal Service. I worked there for many years and retired from the Postal Service. I had one son. His name was Matthew. He was born back in 1978. Wonderful kid. You know, we all say our kids are wonderful, but Matthew was especially a very nice kid. Not much trouble growing up, a little bit as an adult because he did get into a little trouble now and then, but nothing, you know, spectacular. Just a really grounded son who had a lot of friends and a lot of energy and a lot of ideas about where he was going in life. He just couldn't settle into anything long term. So in 2009, I retired from all of this work that I had done, looking forward to a life of traveling and just enjoying those golden years. And a year after my retirement, my husband started to develop Lewy body dementia, and it took him within a few years' time. And in that time, he just declined, and it was in fits and starts. You noticed it in the early years, but later on, he was getting worse and worse. With dementia, you're just not always here in the present. Your mind is somewhere else, and it became quite a challenge. So by the late 2013, he was having a lot of episodes where he was hallucinating and, you know, getting paranoid and was becoming quite a challenge to take care of. But I made a commitment to him. I would keep him home as long as I possibly could. And it helped that my son, who's now, you know, an adult in his mid-30s, who lived a couple of hours away, would come up on his days off and help me out. Because I needed a little support, a little backup so I can run errands, run to the store and what have you. I couldn't bring my husband anymore because he would run off. So we enter 2014. My son decides he's going to get serious with life. And in so doing, he's decided he's going to pursue his dream of being a building contractor. And I could help him. You know, I could do the business end of things. So I was working with him on that. And then tragedy struck. And so my book talks about what I was going through just before that tragedy hit, and then what happened, and then what came after.
Lewy body dementia is what I remember Robin Williams having when he was suicide from that.
Yes.
Hearing about your experiences with your husband, that really is intense.
It was very intense. And when he was diagnosed with it early on, he was diagnosed in 2012. He had had a little stroke in 2011, but it took them a year to figure out what was really happening. I did my research, and I looked and looked and looked for information on Lewy body dementia to see what we were in for. And there were some really good resources. There's an organization for this kind of condition, and they helped a lot. And there were a few books people had written, which helped describe what you might be looking at on a day-to-day basis with somebody with Lewy body. But it's a process that I would say it's kind of like having Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and you're on a roller coaster, because you have days where you're up on a high and you're doing fine, and then boom, that roller coaster hits a dip, and your person is just a challenge, a very, very challenge. And my husband was more challenging because his native language was Spanish. He was from Mexico, and he would often slip into talking to me in Spanish, and he's off in some netherworld. I didn't know what he was talking about, and trying to understand what the dilemma was at a moment was very, very hard for me. So I had a rough time of it. I will mention that, you know, after going through what I went through with my husband, and, you know, he ended up in hospice, but I kept him here at home. He passed away here at the house. When Robin Williams, when I heard the news that Robin had died, and they hadn't really said how, I knew. I just had this intuitive feel that he had Lewy body dementia and that he had committed suicide. How I knew that, I don't know. If I had not been dealing with my husband going through this, I wouldn't have had any clue what Lewy body dementia was about. So I think Robin's death certainly has brought that disease to a forefront. There's a lot of other people well known who have had it, but it's a challenge. It's very sad.
Well, some of the unusual experiences you had with your husband, you're driving home from Phoenix and your husband has an episode, as you describe it. Mm-hmm. Can you share that?
Yes. This was in late 2013. I had taken him down to Phoenix to see his neurologist. And when we left, my son had showed up. I had told him we would be down there. And my son lived in the Phoenix area. And he met us and he said, let's go have lunch. So we went and had lunch. And Sal, my husband, was feeling okay that day. In the mornings and early afternoons, he sometimes was okay. And Matthew had said after lunch, can you stop by at my house? I have a few things that I would like you to pick up and bring up, you know, to your house. Like, okay, fine. So we take off and I'm heading over towards Matthew's house, and I turn up the street. It's called 23rd Avenue. It's a residential area, and it's just a few blocks up that road to get to my son's house. And as I'm going up the road, my husband starts freaking out on me, and he just goes into this space where he's yelling, stop, stop, stop. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get killed. Stop, stop. And I, you know, pull over, I stop the car, and I'm like, what's going on? Nobody's going to get hurt. There's no traffic. You know, we're okay. No, no, no. Don't go. Don't go. Don't go. He was so adamant that we should not go down that street that I thought, well, whatever Matt had for us to pick up isn't that important. I need to get Sal home. So I turned and headed over to the freeway and went on home. And Sal was a bit agitated on the way home, but by the time we got here, he had calmed down. Now, this was 23rd Avenue. And so this played a role a short time later with my son.
When you got the phone call?
Yes, I got a phone call one morning from Phoenix Police. It was a detective asking, you know, are you the mother of Matthew? And I said, well, yes. And, you know, my heart dropped because the police don't call you unless it's really bad news. You know, he proceeded to tell me your son was killed in a hit and run last night. And I'm like, huh? What? I'm like, no, 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 this can't be. He proceeds to give me a little information. I'm falling apart inside, but I had enough presence of mind to at least get a little bit of information and details. I knew he had a dog because he lived in this area that the police had told me where this had occurred, which happened to be 23rd Avenue and the intersection of 23rd and across street, Maryland. And this was just two or three blocks away from where Sal had flipped out previously and said, no, no, someone's going to get hit. So, yes, someone got hit, but not at that point where Sal and I were driving down the road. It did happen. And I don't know to this day if Sal somehow in his dementia was able to see things, you know, from another point of view because he wasn't all here in this physical world or what was going on. But he certainly felt something tragic was going to happen. And he was pretty direct about it. Somebody was going to get hit on that street. Well, it ended up being Matthew. I was able to get from the detective, you know, the time of death and, you know, what actually happened. And Matthew had been crossing the street, taking his dog, I'm assuming, to the dog park, which was right across that street. It's, like I said, residential area. Matt lived right down a block away. And a car hit him and kept going. It was a hit and run. Fortunately, the young man who was driving the car, it was his mother's car, and when he got home, he was all shook up, and she convinced him to turn himself in, which he did. And they never understood why he had hit Matt. He didn't see him. He said, I didn't see anybody. I didn't see anybody.
Yeah, see, that's what's so interesting about all the details with this, because with Matthew, you said he was diligent. He knew how to cross the street. The dog had been taught how to cross the street, the whole nine yards. Yeah. It didn't make sense to anyone how this could possibly have happened, because these were uncharacteristic circumstances for him.
Absolutely. It was not the norm for Matthew. He had lived in that neighborhood for maybe 3-4 years at least. And he had two dogs at the time. Well, not at the point of his death. One had passed a few months before. But sometimes he took care of one of our dogs. And so every time he had the dogs down there at his house, he would take them to the dog park. And he was so afraid that they might get out of the house one day and head over there on their own that he was teaching them that if you go to this corner of this street, you always stop, because he was afraid they would just run across the street and a car would hit them. So I knew Matthew was so worried about his dog getting hit, I guess not so much about himself, but about his dog, that I couldn't figure out why he would be standing on this corner. It happened at 7 p.m. at night. It's in January, so it's already dark. There's a street light, but it's a little distance away. So it's not the brightest corner in this residential area. And the park across the way didn't have a lot of lighting there at that intersection. But why would Matthew have entered that intersection with the dog if a car was coming up the road? And I asked the detective, did the car have his headlights on? And he said, oh, yeah, you know, we've checked the diagnostics and everything. He had his lights on. So why Matthew didn't see this car speeding up the road with headlights at night, I didn't understand. I could not wrap my head around that. It made no sense whatsoever. Fortunately, the dog was in front of him. He didn't have him leashed because it was a very well-behaved dog, and the dog did not, you know, get hit. But the dog did, of course, you know, see the result of this accident and had run over. From what I heard from a neighbor, they saw the dog run over to where my son's had landed, and people came running from a basketball court because they heard the noise, and it scared the dog again, and the dog ran home. And the detective had told me when he called, did your son have a dog? Because it's sitting at his front porch. Thankfully, the dog was safe, and I had my son's girlfriend run over and pick up the dog and bring him here. Matthew was always careful. So why that happened, I could not figure it out.
Okay, so you went through the process of grieving and planning a funeral and giving yourself time to recollect your senses because you were still dealing with your husband. But the thing that came after was that when you were talking to mediums, when you were ready to do that, then you did get some information from Matthew on what he saw as he crossed the road.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Matthew passing the way he did shook up my world. And yes, I had to grieve, but I couldn't grieve, you know, in the way that a lot of people do, where you can take time and just process it, because I had my husband who was falling apart and he needed care and I had to focus on him. I had time on my hands to read and to research, as I like to do, about, well, what's it like in the afterlife? Matthew had sent me some signs that indicated he was over there on the other side, some remarkable signs. You know, I wondered, how do you do that?
What are the signs? Because that's where people are curious. What were the signs?
Oh, well, the most remarkable sign was, I'll give you the second remarkable sign. The morning that I got that phone call, I had been driving down to the highway. I live in a rural area. I have to drive down to get the newspaper. And on my drive down, a flock of bluebirds flew alongside the car. And I thought, well, that's really interesting because I don't get bluebirds in this area. My area does not have bluebirds. They tend to live a little higher elevation. But I thought, wow, this is really cool. Look at the bluebirds. And it made me think of my son, who when he was little would sing, you know, Mr. Bluebird on My Shoulder song. And so he came to mind as a little kid, and I thought, well, that's really kind of cool. And I get home, and a little while later, I get this phone call from the police. So I look back, and I know that that was a sign from my son, a little memory that was triggered by these bluebirds who showed up from nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
So that was one sign. But later that night, I was sitting at the table, and, you know, I'm trying to grieve and trying to keep it together. And I had put my husband to bed, and I was waiting for my sisters to show up. They were coming from out of town, and they were going to get in pretty late, but thankfully they were going to come to help me through this. And I'm sitting there, and I was thinking about, you know, what had happened that day and how Matt had passed away the night before. And I remembered a conversation I'd had with him a few days before. He was at the house. We got into some very interesting conversations, and it led to some things about spirituality and religion and stuff like that. And I had said something to him along the lines that, you know, hey, Matt, I know you chose me as your parent. I know that. I don't know where I got that from, but I know that. So you can't blame me. Sometimes we didn't always get along. You picked me, dude. And then, you know, another part of the conversation was, I don't know why, Matt, but, you know, I have this feeling that when we die, you know, we do go to a heaven of some sort and kind of keep an eye on each other. So I make a promise, you know, when I die, I'll come and let you know that I'm over there. And, you know, I'll probably go before you. But if you should pass, you know, I hope not. But if you should, I expect you to come give me a sign. Agreed? And yeah, sure, we made that promise. So I'm sitting there thinking about that first night. And it's like, man, we made this promise. You were supposed to come and give me a sign. Where's my sign? Now, I'd forgotten about the bluebirds and connecting that as a sign at the moment. But I'm sitting there like, where's my sign? And then it dawned on me that the night before all of this tragedy came into my awareness, I and my husband were sitting in the living room. We had a television program that had started, and it was a speech, and, you know, it was taking a while for things to get going, and I'm fidgeting. And at one point, I looked up, and there was a cluster of sparkling lights in front of me. It wasn't more than an arm's length away. And all these different colors, kind of like a sparkler, if anyone's aware of a sparkler 4th of July, that's what they look like, but with colors. And they showed up, and they were there, I don't know, 2-3 seconds, and they disappeared. And I thought, oh my God, what was that? I've never seen that before. And I looked over at my husband to my right, and he's looking at the TV, and the sparkling lights showed up in front of him, but he didn't see them. He didn't notice them. I saw them. And I thought, well, why doesn't he see them? I'm seeing them. They disappeared, and I'm looking ahead again, and I'm like, I guess I'm losing it like he is. That's not going to be good. I'm seeing lights now. They showed up again in front of me. And as they did, I'm just like in shock and awe, just looking at them, and they moved over to my left, and to my left was a little coffee table. They hovered over the coffee table and they disappeared. On the coffee table was a book by Edgar Cayce that my husband had apparently dropped there at some point because he would wander around the house and pick things up and move them. And I noticed that book, and then my mind quickly forgot the lights because, oh my God, here's the book that I read years and years ago that gave me that idea that children choose their parents. Oh my, it's right here. And I picked it up, opened it, right to that page. I mean, it went right to that page where Cayce is talking about, you know, the soul choosing their family situation. And I'm so excited. It's like Matthew's coming up tomorrow or the next day to help me, and I'm going to show him where I got that idea. It's in this Cayce book. Oh my God, this is so cool. So then I'm sitting there reading the Cayce book all over again and ignoring the TV. So 24 hours later, as I'm sitting at the dining room table asking Matt, why didn't you still show a sign? Boom, there it is. He did. That was Matthew. That was his energy showing up in front of my face and saying hi to his dad and then drawing my attention to this book as if to say, hey, Mom, you're right. I did pick you.
Somehow your husband managed to pick up that book. I think he had a little inspiration there too.
I think he did because, you know, this book was sitting on a shelf in a room you know, where I have one little room I call an office, and most of those books are in there. And my husband had actually wandered in there at some point and brought this book out and dropped it right there on that table, and I hadn't noticed. It could have been sitting there for days. I don't know. But, you know, it's like, oh, this, that book, of all books. So, you know, this realization that Matthew was fine, he showed me a sign, helped me process the grief. It helped ease my feelings at the moment. It's like, oh, my God, Matt's not here. And, yes, I'm going to go through this loss. But I also know that he's just right there and that he's sending signs. And, oh, yeah, the bloopers, they had to be from him. Over time, there were more and more signs. Well, long story short, I started reading about the afterlife and spirit communication and mediums. I was led to read books written by a couple of mediums and somebody else who had interacted with them when his son had passed over and had gotten a lot of answers. So I decided at one point that I really want to have a medium reading because I really still don't understand why Matthew was in that position to get hit by a car. I knew Matt was fine. I just wanted to know why were you in the street at that point. So I found a medium through a website called Best Psychic Directory. It was somebody who lived far on the other side of the country, and we, you know, made the arrangements. She would call her, I would call her. All she had was my name. But she knew nothing at all about the situation. And I had read enough about mediums and mediumship to learn, you know, you don't tell the medium right off the bat, hey, I'm trying to reach my son who got killed by a car. You just sit there and say, yes, I'd like to meet my loved one and see what they get. And she was pretty remarkable. She got a lot of information, and she had my mother, and my mother presented Matthew to her, and she described Matthew. She described the dog he had with him on the other side. It was the dog that had passed away a few months before. She described a cat he had that had disappeared from his house, and we never found it, and I'd forgotten all about that cat. She had so many details, what he looked like, his personality, so much information. In my head, though, I'm screaming at Matt, like, why are you in the street? But I can't say anything to her because I don't want to tip her off, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So she's picking up that he had a very quick, unexpected, tragic passing, and she was having a little trouble just picking up exactly how that went. And I've learned that mediums will hesitate to tell you the specifics because not every sitter is prepared to hear the specifics.
Right.
So she's kind of, you know, dancing around it as best as she could. And then she says, do you have any questions or is there anything else you'd like to hear from? And I said, you know, a couple of things. And so she tried to connect with someone else. And then Matthew kind of, the way she described it, he came up and kind of pushed this other person aside and said, wait, I haven't finished.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's my son. So he, you know, looking back, I know from my own work, doing mediumship is not like you're on a telephone and you say, hey, Matt, why were you in the street? Well, gee, Mom, here's what was going on. It's more like, Matt, why are you in the street? And he's like trying to relay to this medium through his vibrational level, meeting her vibrational level, sending signs, symbols, words, whatever it is he can, you know, get into her perspective. And she's then trying to translate to me what he's giving her.
Right.
What she says is, okay, well, your son is showing me that he was going to the other side, but instead the angels came and told him it's time to go to the other side. So instead, he went to the other side. The angels were there, and he didn't feel a thing. And then she's like, does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, that was so perfect. Yes, it makes absolute sense, because I will tell you now how he died. He was on one side of the street. He was crossing over to the other side of the street. And just as he was reaching the sidewalk on the other side, a car came and hit him and took him away. So what he's saying is, he was going to the other side, but it wasn't the other side of the street. He went to the other side of the veil. Yeah. And the angels were there. And yeah, they took care of him. And he didn't feel anything. And so that was the most hopeful, helpful, healing thing I could have heard.
He said that he had a choice.
Yes. He said he had a choice. So, you know, the first part of it is when I'm hearing this, it's like, oh, my God. Okay, that under, makes me understand. He did not see the car. He wasn't supposed to, because the angel said, hey, time to go to the other side. And he's like, oh, yeah. Maybe he's looking at them as he's walking across the street and not at the car coming. I don't know. But they took him. Well, when this car hit him, and, you know, his body, of course, is going to land somewhere. He reported that he actually saw himself lying there and, you know, was a little like, what's going on? What's going on? And the angel showed him that he had a choice. And the angel said, okay, in a brief moment, I'll show you what could happen if you choose to stay here. If you want to stay here, this is what you're looking at. And so he had a brief flash of what would happen if he lived. He had so many lacerations and broken bones. He was shown what a long, hard recovery that would be. And that I, dealing with my husband as I was, maybe wouldn't be able to, you know, handle this. Mm-hmm. It would be so hard for me to be taking care of my son and my husband at the same time. So Matthew, in a flash, sees what that would mean if he were to live. And he chose not to stay in the body. He chose to go ahead and continue on over to the other side. I don't know if the angel showed him, you know, what may happen if he made that choice. Perhaps they did. He didn't relay that, but he did relay that, you know, he was given that choice and saw how hard it would be for me. And so he chose to stay on the other side.
See, that's the information you get from a medium that helps solidify and validate your own experiences, because with her being spot on so many aspects of that, it gives you confidence. See, this at this point, you weren't a medium, and now you are a certified medium. Big difference. Yeah. Big change.
Well, yeah, a huge change in my life. You know, up until this tragedy had struck, yeah, I'd lived a normal life. I wasn't born seeing spirits. Yeah, growing up in the era I did, you got exposed to, you know, bits and pieces of, you know, movies about ghosts or, you know, little psychic abilities, ESP, things like that. And I found it interesting. Sometimes I'd read or watch something and go, oh, well, that's kind of cool. But I never pursued anything. I knew I had a little bit of an intuitive ability, but, you know, nothing that I thought was remarkable. I figured most of us have that. But with the change in my life and, you know, having to process the grief of his loss and then go through that gradual loss that I was suffering with my husband as he passed over, I had the time to read about the medium. I had learned a lot about what they can bring in, a little bit about how they do it, but I was the type, like I said, I've been a researcher. I was the type that really wanted to know more. Oh, okay, so a medium can connect with spirit, but how does that work? How does that feel? What is that like? Oh, I'd like to know more. So after my husband passed, I was free to go to classes and workshops and seminars, and I started delving a little more into that spiritual side of things and was able to take a few exercises that, you know, showed if you had a little bit of a psychic or intuitive abilities, and I thought that was kind of fun. A year after my husband died, I was kind of at a loss. I was struggling with the grief. I thought I had a good handle on it, but I had a hard time. I was led to somebody previously that is a medium, and I reached out to her and said, you know, I just don't know where I'm going with my life. And we had a little chit chat about that, and she gave some ideas. And a couple, 3 weeks later, she called me and said, hey, Diane, do you happen to know this other medium? And she gave me the name of Suzanne Wilson. And I said, well, yeah, you know, I know of her. I went to Helping Parents Heal, which is an organization that helps bereaved parents who know that their children are around them from the other side. I'd gone to a meeting, and she had presented, and she's really remarkable, but I really don't know her, you know, personally. I just know of her. So the first meeting says, well, okay, Suzanne Wilson called me, and she is in need of a part-time assistant, and I thought of you. Now, I knew she thought of me because of our discussion previously about me being kind of lost and not knowing what I should be doing. She figured, oh, you know, maybe Diane would be a good one. Would you be interested? And I said, well, geez, I would if I could work from home. That would be great. You know, and she says, yeah, yeah, you can. So she connected us. Suzanne Wilson calls me and offers me the position after a short chat. Part of the chat was her saying, yeah, you know, I didn't know where I was going to find somebody that has a little understanding of mediumship. I understand you know some of it. And I said, oh, yeah, a little bit. And she said, so I made the call to my friend and put the phone down, and then my ceiling fan kicked on. And I looked at it, my husband looked at it, and we're like, why is that going? The remote's on the table, but why is the fan going? And I said, oh, that might be my son. He's in spirit, and he does that. He does that at my house. He installed the ceiling fans, and he sometimes will kick them on if people are here and we're talking about him. The fan will kick on.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, your son? Oh, okay, hold on. And then she says, okay, I've got your son. He's standing right there. He's got his hand on your shoulder. And he says, yes, that was me. So that kind of sealed the deal with her and me. It's like, oh, okay, I'll work for you. Now, working for her is part-time, and I'm handling clients and scheduling and, you know, trying to answer questions and learning a little bit about what she does. And I was offered an opportunity with her to take her classes. And she was doing a number of classes over time that involved building up your intuition, building up your psychic skills, beginning mediumship, intermediate mediumship, advanced mediumship, and then she put me in her certified mediumship program.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So what I learned through these classes, which were a bonus for me because I was working for her, was that I can connect with spirit. And by working at it, I can bring up my own frequency and vibration and ask those spirit people to come in and give me information. I'm not a medium who can see spirit walk in the door or standing behind you, but I can ask. I have to focus, I have to request, and then I have to just feel and let it flow. And then I get these messages, and I get these images, and I get these things that I can share with whoever my sitter might be. And that is remarkable. I did not ever think that I would be at that point in my life. I'm looking at, in, you know, when I retired from government work, I'm going to go out and have fun, go fishing and ride around in an RV, and we'll just have a blast. And instead, I'm going through loss and grief and working for a medium, and now I am able to do mediumship. I'm just astounded at where my life has gone, and I know my son was behind it every step of the way and continues to be behind me in everything I've done.
There's one part of the book that I think is really important because it brings a different aspect that most people aren't familiar with and don't talk about that I really believe adds another element to your story. And that's what your husband went through, Lewy body dementia, and he was connecting with Matthew and telling you, Matthew has come to visit. I do not believe those were hallucinations. I believe that with his abilities stifled with the logical mind, that he was able to see the other view that mediums can see, some mediums can see, and he was accessing that. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, it makes absolute sense to me. Now, had I not been delving into, you know, mediumship as I was dealing with my husband and those times when he was off in another world, I might have agreed with the, you know, the doctors and the experts and the people that were helping me with hospice that, well, yes, with dementia, you know, the medications or the condition, they're just paranoid, they're hallucinating, don't pay attention. What I understood was that, no, they're not really hallucinating and they're not really paranoid. They're actually living in that spirit world. They're making connections with spirit. We need to pay more attention to these people when they're relaying things to us, instead of saying, oh, no, you can't be seeing your mother. That, you know, she died a long time ago. You're crazy. You say, oh, your mom's here? Tell me more. And just encourage them to relay what they're seeing and sensing and feeling. So my husband often was talking about Matthew being around. And one of the more remarkable points is where Matthew, he says, Matthew came to me and he told me that he's learning how to help people who are dying. That he doesn't know it all, so he's learning from someone else, but that he's going to be there when it's my time to die. My husband's telling me this. This man is not hallucinating. I am convinced Matthew came and told him, yes, I'm going to be there for you, Pop. And I'm learning how to do this. So when it's your time, I'll be ready. I'll help you transition over. That sounded like my son, that he would do that. And I think he probably has done that for a few people over time because, you know, I've lost a couple more people and some of Matthew's friends have passed over since he left. And I think he's always been there for whomever he was connected with.
The information your husband provided was very specific. So for somebody mm-hmm. who's hallucinating or, you know, fantasizing, he had specific, pertinent information that offered mm-hmm. You know, some kind of content and context for what he was experiencing. That, I think, is the gold in your book, because it brings through another aspect of our personality, our consciousness, our mind that is working on more than one level that gives us access mm-hmm. to different dimensions when the ego is silenced. I think that was what was put on the back burner, was the ego.
I think you're right. You know, with dementia, that would make sense that ego does move to the back. It's no longer needed. It's no longer important. And so what's coming through is your connections with that spiritual side. And we know, you know, that the spirit is our home. We're just existing in these earthly bodies for a temporary period of time. We come here to learn whatever lessons we want to learn, to interact, to be human. But our real home is on the spirit side. So why wouldn't it make sense that a person who is not all there, as we might say, hallucinating, is actually experiencing life on that other side? And it's difficult for them to actually describe it because it's so remarkably beautiful that how do you put it into words as a human? So they come up with whatever they can, and then we sit there and say, oh, man, they're really out there now, aren't they? When in fact they're not. We're the ones who are not in touch with reality.
Yeah, we're kind of stuck here with all the flotsam and jetsam of the material world, and that can be confusing and overwhelming, as you have experienced. You got a few prods to write the first book, Living a Loving Life, mm-hmm. All Day, Every Day. Mm-hmm. And then with all of this that you've learned, there's another book.
Putting together the first book, you know, was something Matthew kept nudging and pushing and shoving me to do. And, you know, I knew it was something that was going to be coming early on. It just took me a while to get it put together. And he sent people my way that helped me get this book into a nice format where I could get it out there for people to read and get some, you know, hope from. But in writing the book, I had so much other information that I wanted to put in that, oh my God, I had tons of stuff. And the person that was really so helpful that Matt had brought into my awareness had been a literature teacher for decades. And she was trying to show me how to write a book that's interesting instead of a research paper. And she said, you don't need all those details. Those could go in another book. And I'm like, oh, okay. So the focus of the second book is going to be a little bit more of those details.
Yeah.
And it will talk about some of the experiences I had from mediums who were both professionals and practicing, and then what I experienced learning mediumship and how that process worked through me and how astounding that I am. I want to share some of that excitement I would have if I have a spirit person coming in and they're showing me, you know, evidence of, oh, look, I have your dad and he's on a boat and it looks like, you know, he's going up and down the boat and they're celebrating something and I see fireworks. And the sitter says, oh my God, my dad was in a boat club and off Long Island, and every 4th of July, they would go out there and there'd be fireworks. I mean, that's exciting to me to experience what that spirit was showing me. And the sitter says, oh, that makes sense. You don't hear that from the medium. You'll just hear the medium say, yeah, I've got your dad in a boat and blah, blah, blah. You don't hear the medium say, my God, I was so excited when he was showing me that.
Yes. It's like, yes, slam dunk, touchdown. Okay, I'm on. The minute you get that first hit, there's a sense of, okay, this is legit. We can go forward. Because until the moment you get that hit, it's all, anything's possible. And it's vague until it makes sense to the sitter. And then you've got, okay, I can continue with this line because we're making a connection.
Absolutely. Because at the very beginning, you know, especially because you don't know anything about that sitter, you know, you have their name, right? You might know a little bit for whatever the reason, but basically you try to set that aside and it's like, okay, I don't know the sitter. Let's see who comes in. And sometimes you get stuff and the sitter's like, I don't know. And it kind of throws you off. But when you start getting stuff and the sitter says, yeah, I understand that, then you carry with it. And pretty soon, I have fun. I am telling this story and I feel like, yeah, okay. I feel like I'm just watching a movie and all this stuff is playing out. And sometimes it seems kind of unusual, mm-hmm. but I'm just going to relate what I get. And I'm having a blast in many ways. And then the sitter, you know, will be sitting there and they'll say, well, I could get that. That part I didn't quite understand, but oh my God, yeah, you've got my person. This is really cool. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
The other part of that though, is that sometimes somebody wants to hear from a specific person. And like you mm-hmm. said about Matthew earlier, well, he pushed that one person aside because he wasn't done yet. Okay.
Yeah.
So they can get kind of dominant when, you know, it's like they have a message to bring through and it's like, well, you weren't the one I was supposed to connect with. I don't care. This is more important.
Yes, absolutely. And I've learned that, you know, learning the mediumship and then doing it myself is that sometimes the sitter does have something specific in mind. They might have a person, they might have an incident, they might have a pet name, something that they really want to hear from. Well, you know, we are really working at, I'll say, the control of spirit. Spirit decides who's going to step in and what they're going to talk about. It's not up to us. So, you know, for me to have assumed that, oh, I can sit, oh, I had a long list for this first medium. I wrote 20 questions, right? Oh, I'm going to do all these questions. And she starts rolling and it's like, well, throw that list out. Let's see where this is going. And, you know, a handful of them did get answers. But, you know, with her, I'm hoping for Matt, and the first one who shows up is my mom. And I was not expecting. My mom had passed over 30 years before. And I'm like, oh, my God, mom's here. Oh, yeah, I recognize that. And then mom brings in Matthew. So I thought that was really cool. And I've learned that some kind of spirit will do that. I've had that happen to me, where one loved one shows up. It's not who the sitter was hoping for, but there they are. And then they introduce the person that that sitter was really hoping to hear from.
I think it's like a chain link fence. I mean, mm-hmm. there's one vibration or one chain that's heavier and it can reach on to the lighter or the heavier chain. And I don't know, that's the only word that comes to mind right now, is that they're linked. Yeah. And the first one isn't solid enough to make the initial contact, where your mom was rock solid right there with you and her energy mm-hmm. was able to give that boost, to provide the boost to Matthew. That's just the way I see some of these things of why we get somebody else first, is that they're the ones who are in sync with us, like autopilot yeah. in sync, and then the others can be contacted through them.
Yeah, and you know, if it's somebody who's been over there for a little while, they've had a little time to play around with this, to learn. Because, you know, when you die, you don't step over into the spirit world and all of a sudden you're all knowing and you can do everything and anything. That doesn't happen because you're still a remnant of this earthly life and you have to go through a process to readjust to heavenly home, to the spirit world, and to learn how to then turn around and communicate with your people that are back home. So the longer you're there, the more practice you may have at, you know, sending signs and information to your people, even though we may not recognize them, they're still sending it. And so I think my mom had been there long enough that, you know, when Matthew crossed over, she was certainly by his side at the point where he was meeting his loved ones. And she was able to work with him and help teach him how to step forward and give him that encouragement and that push. You know, like, here, kid, there's your mom.
Well, I also like the fact that Abby, the dog, knew, because he visited Abby and Abby was right there and she could see him and then turn around and looked at you like, so did you see him?
Right. That was remarkable. You know, we were preparing his, you know, program for his party, celebration of life. We didn't really do a memorial or a funeral. We just did a party, two of them, in fact. And my stepdaughter and I were sitting on the sofa going through photos, trying to put together a little video program. And Abby's laying in one corner. I have a door on one side of the room and a door on the other side, opposite. And Abby sits up all of a sudden and she's looking at the one door and then her eyes are tracking as if somebody's walking through the room and she gets up and she walks to the other door and then stares at it. And Patricia and I are watching her and Pat says, oh my God, she sees Matt. And I said, yeah, he must have just walked through. I mean, I'm convinced she was watching him walk through.
Yeah.
That was her guy. She was one of those dogs that was her man. And no. Of course he would see him, of course.
Well, and it's difficult. I've watched pets grieve when they lose a pet friend and a person friend, and they grieve just like we do. So I think the benefit is that they do have abilities to see things that we don't see that are beyond what we register, most of us. And that I feel very strongly that, that's something we can learn by paying attention to them too. Is there somebody else here? Are you just going to sleep through this? Or are you going to listen to what they want, according to my cats and dogs? Okay. It's like, So it's, they have you at, I think they have us at a disadvantage because they see more of what we see and sometimes wish we would hurry up and get up to speed on some of this stuff.
I think you're right. And, you know, in my own opinion is that our pets are nothing but unconditional love. And I think having that quality about them makes them more in tune with that spiritual side, because that's what we are in spirit, is unconditional love. In our human forms, we put conditions on everything, don't we? And so we have a little bit of a barrier sometimes to making those connections. But when you can open up to that unconditional love, I think you're more aware of what's going on that side. So our dogs, our cats, you know, they don't have any judgments on anyone, none. And they just love you. And if you pet them, they love you more. And if you give them a treat, oh my God, you can't get rid of them. So, you know, they are just nothing but love. And I think that helps them tune in and see those spirit people who are coming in with their own unconditional love.
Taking that back to the teenager who was the hit and run person, how were you able to process that? Because at first you were, you know, it's like vengeance and all, and then realizing that, okay, maybe that wasn't the direction you wanted to go.
Right. You know, I knew nothing about the young man, except from what the detective had said. You know, he was about, I think, 18 years old. He had been at the barber shop that was down, you know, a few blocks away and was heading home. And he doesn't remember hitting anyone. He remembers seeing maybe a bicycle, maybe a dog. Well, the bicycle was, there's a bicycle sign next to the street because they had a bike path. He didn't see my son. He saw a sign. You know, so I thought, well, shoot, maybe he was on drugs. Maybe he was on his cell phone. Maybe. And the police report, which I got my hands on because I just needed to read it, indicated that he had no clue what had happened. They could not find proof that he had used the cell phone, that he didn't, like, bend down to pick something up off the floor, that he was not on any drugs, that he was just heading home. And this happened, and he freaked out when he heard this noise, didn't know what had happened, and just kept going. He didn't have the sense at his age to just stop and see, did I hit something? What's going on? He just freaked out and went home. I learned a little bit more about him and his situation and his family. You know, social media, you can get a lot of information. So, yes, at first I was angry, and it's like, well, what was it, some punk who was out, you know, trying to get marks for something, or, you know, was he high? What was going on? I'm so mad. But when I learned a little more about him, his situation, his family life was, you know, he was in a challenging situation. They had had some losses in their own family, and he was just one of those little lost souls who didn't know what he was doing in life. I felt really bad for him. I just felt really bad. And I came to this feeling that, you know, sometimes we're just put into a situation in our lives that's going to make a huge impact on our life moving forward. And I think maybe that was the case with this young man. He had no intention of hurting someone that night when he got in that car. It just happened. And when I learned that the angels had said, it's time for you to go, Matt, the angels played some kind of a role in this. Maybe they didn't let this young man see my son in the road. I don't know. But it happened. And then I felt like, you know, I hate to see this young man's life ruined any more than it is all now, because he has to carry this with him for the rest of his life. So, you know, we went through several months of the police working with him and trying to figure out what to charge him with, on and on and on. And it ended up, he was offered a 5-year probationary sentence, and they didn't do manslaughter or anything like that. It was more like, you know, like hit and run and endangerment, you know, kind of soft crimes, because he didn't have any priors. And I was invited to the sentencing hearing. So I wrote a statement that basically said to him, you know, you took my son, and this is how important he was in our life. So it was a little bit of a, Matt not being there, he's not there to help me with my husband, you know, da 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 da, nice little statement. But at the end, I said, you know, I would like to recommend to the Corps, and my son, I know my son Matthew believes strongly in this. We forgive this young man for what happened, and we hope, you know, the judge shows some leniency in the sentence. We would hope that he has a long life and that he does well in his life, you know. So I read that, and this kid's crying. He only had one friend that was at the court with him. None of his family came because they were kind of dysfunctional, I guess. I don't know. And the court, people are crying in the court because I'm forgiving him for taking my son's life because this young man, he's going to suffer anyway. Why make it worse? And so the judge gave the sentence, and the judge said, young man, you were just given a gift by this woman, and I hope you pay attention to this. I will give you 5 years probation. If you mess up, of course, you could end up in prison, but I will give you that. I will give you that chance. Take that opportunity and turn your life around and find something productive to do with your life. And that felt like the right thing to do. I forgave this man. I knew Matthew would want to forgive him. Matthew would have felt horrible if this young man who just through some tragic circumstance ended up in prison and had a rough life moving forward. So he was given a chance, and I tried not to follow up for the next 5+ years on the young man because I didn't want my heart broken to see that maybe he had messed up and ended up in prison. But after 5 years, curiosity got me, and I looked it up, and he did not break his probation. So hopefully he's doing okay in life, and that feels right.
I think that's another important part, too. Given what your son demonstrated with the friendship with the younger Matthew, that your son would have had that beneficent, that wonderful, magnanimous going forward, generosity, open heart, mm-hmm. non-judgment. There was a right place, right time for everybody. And we aren't privy to the higher view. mm-hmm. We just know mm-hmm. it hurts to lose someone. And at the same time, it's also tragic when you're the one who makes that happen.
Yes, yes. There's tragedy all around in our minds. And, you know, I understand those emotions because I did go through that for a bit. You know, I wanted vengeance. I wanted to know, you know, oh, make this kid suffer. He took away my son. But then when I settled down and, you know, tried to tap into that more spiritual side and try to understand what is the meaning in some of the things that we go through in life and realize that this young man had no intention. It's like, it's the right thing to do to forgive him. I might have felt differently if it was, you know, some kids that were out joyriding and they were playing a game like, oh, I'll give you 3 points if you hit someone. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, and they did it. I might feel a little different.
Yeah.
But in this situation, I was convinced that it was just a tragic happenstance. And for whatever reason, you know, it was time for Matthew to leave. There was an exit point, as they call them. This happened to be his exit point. And for that young man, it was a very crucial point in his life where, you know, you'll hit a crossroad in that path that you go through in life and you make a decision to go this way or that. Well, that decision was made for him in a sense. You know, he didn't decide to hit someone. It happened. And his life was going to go one way or another. And I hopefully, you know, helped encourage or influence part of that path so that he went a little different route than where he might have headed. And I hope he ends up being a very wonderful young person and adult and whatever it is he has in life. Yeah, that was very important. And I knew Matthew would have wanted me to do that. Matthew was always very strong with his friends, and he did things that I had no awareness of, but when we had the parties for him, I met so many different people from all different walks of life and so many stories. Oh, well, Matthew, he did this for me. Matthew did that for me. And but I didn't know any of this. You mentioned the other little Matthew found out after Matt died that the neighbor that lived on the corner where this accident occurred had a son named Matthew. And this young Matthew was going into high school. And my Matthew and this young Matthew kind of buddied up. And my Matthew would take the kid over to the park and play, you know, football with him, throw the ball, let him kick, because the kid wanted to play football when he got into high school, and his dad was handicapped. His dad could not roll out and play with him. So my Matthew often took this younger fellow over there to the park and would play with him with the football and encourage him to do well in school. And I found out that my son would leave money for the younger Matthew. In the mornings, when my son would go to work, he would put money under a rock in front of his house, and the other Matt could come over on his way to school and collect the money so he had something to spend during the day. I did not know that my son was doing this. I knew nothing about this kid that lived behind him named Matthew, but his dad was sharing all of that with me the day that I and my sisters went to the park to see, you know, when Matthew had been hit. And the dad came out and told us all kinds of stories. So that was remarkable.
Well, and the title of your book came from him.
Oh, my. It did. Uh-huh. It did. So, you know, if you write a book, sometimes you have that title right there at the front of your mind, and sometimes you don't. And this one, I could not come up with a title for the life of me, and I still have pages of titles, you know, like, well, maybe this, or I'll think about that. Couldn't come up with anything I liked. And the fellow that helped me polish the book and get it into the final format had told me, don't worry about the title, you know, I'll read the book, you know, something will come. It'll come from that book. And I'm like, well, okay. So he calls me one day and says, I've got the title of your book. I'm like, oh, you do? He said, yeah, I finished your book. And I cried when I read this part in your book. It brought me to tears. And here's the story. So the morning of the day where Matthew was killed in this hit and run, that earlier that morning, he had called me on the phone and had said, I'm going to try to come up and see you tomorrow. I know you need some help with Pop. So I should be up there tomorrow. I was going to come today, but I'm going to go to a little meeting tonight. And, you know, it was related to this contracting license he wanted to get. He said, so I'll be up there tomorrow. And by the way, I'm going to try to get a part-time job because, you know, I need to get some money coming in, but I don't want to work full-time because I need to get this contractor's license exam taken and I have to study and get ready for it. So I'm going to do a part-time job and there's an opportunity at the brewing company, a little brew pub, and I can be a part-time brewer and, you know, learn how to brew, but I don't have to work full-time. So I'm filling out the application and it says, you know, what are my qualifications? Now, my son had a habit of, you know, asking me to help him fill out applications because I don't know. Moms are so wise, right? Oh, well, you could say this. So I give him whatever the advice was on what to say for this kind of a job and let it go with that. Found out later that he did go to that brew pub that evening or that late afternoon, but he did not turn in the application. I found the application days later when I was going through his house, cleaning up, going through papers. There's this application for this particular place, and I'm looking at it, and I noticed on the part that says, you know, what are your qualifications for this job? He wrote, and these are the last things he probably ever wrote in his life because he was not much for writing anything. But what he wrote was qualifications, living and loving life all day, every day. And those words blew me away. And, you know, I still have that application in a special spot because this is the last thing that my son wrote. And this is what he was going to say to an employer that, oh, you need to hire me because I'm living and loving life all day, every day. When in fact he died that night. And in a sense, he is now living and loving life all day, every day on that other side. So when Joe read to me that that's the title of the book, it's like, oh, my God, that is so perfect. That is just so perfect because my son's living a loving life over there on the other side, and this is what I'm trying to do with my life. I can't say I do it every day. I can't say I'm perfect. I have my moments where the emotions will get to me or something will get me down, but I do try to live up to this standard. I do try to see life with joy every day, and even when things get a little tough, there is a sparkle there that can bring me back and realize that, hey, as long as I'm sitting here on this planet, I've got things I can do, and if I can touch a few hearts and share my son's story, and maybe some other people will understand that you want to live here while you can, because we don't know how long our lives are, enjoy it, and then when we get over to the other side, it gets even better.
Diane Calderon, certified medium, Reiki master, spiritual teacher, author, Living and Loving Life All Day, Every Day. The next book in the works, soon to be out.
I have a title for it, and Matthew's pushing me on that one, too. just a quick story. I went to a Helping Parents Heal conference, and they had all kinds of presentations. They had mediums giving gallery readings. They had a lot going on. And I just so happened to be told by three different mediums, not that I was looking for this, but they came up to me separately and said, oh, I see your son is pushing you to do more. I see your son is pushing you to be a medium. Oh, I see your son is telling you to sit down and write that book. And so the book is my journey about learning mediumship. And part of that is, you know, practicing mediumship, because how can I write about it if I'm not practicing it? So I'm getting back into that. And the name of the book is Finding the Medium Within. So there's Matthew once again pushing me to get this other book. And I've got a start on it now. I got back from the conference, began writing, and so we're moving forward.
DianeCalderone.com.
I've got things I can do, and if I can touch a few hearts and share my son's story, and maybe some other people will understand that you want to live here while you can, because we don't know how long our lives are. Enjoy it. And then when we get over to the other side, it gets even better.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.